group meeting, Saturday, 12th January, 1985. I hope you all enjoyed Christmas, not merely or only in the conventional way, but in the deep, significant, spiritual way also. You remember we considered a few points as regards the meaning of the statement that Christ was born on Christmas Day. And of course the world regards it as Jesus was born on Christmas Day. Quite possibly he was born on any one of the other 364 days. But the meaning of Christ being born on Christmas Day is peculiarly the emergence of the Christ consciousness in him or her who has lived the Christian life as such. And if Christmas Day has brought a touch, even a touch of transcendence to any one of us, then we shall indeed have lived religiously for that single instant, if it was only a single instant, which embodies the whole of eternity in it. Normally, we human beings are unable to understand and appreciate the meaning of infinity and eternity, how they are both completely embodied in everything finite, everything manifested, howsoever small it may be, howsoever separate it may seem. But if we can utilize the holy days of all the religions of the world, and funnily enough, in India, they enjoy every holy day of all the religions of the world, many of them do, and many means a few millions at least. If we can do that, then we shall discover that not only every day, but every single flicker of passing time will embody that infinity and eternity for us. For us individually, which means also for all humanity, because we don't exist merely as individuals. We individuals, each one of us, is also the whole of humanity. In fact, the whole of the cosmos, because it takes the entire cosmos to incarnate in any one particular being or any particular thing. So I hope you found peace and strength and comfort. Comfort in the sense in which Jesus meant it when he said, "If I go not away from you, the Comforter cannot come." The Comforter is the strength giver. Com fors fortis, fortis, strength. If you look at the origin of the word, that's its real meaning. With strength. With strength, with life power, life energy. And life is eternal. Life is sacred. And that sacred, eternal thing we call life in its actuality is not merely biological life, but everything else that is included in that term. And there is so much else included in that term. It manifests outwardly as birth, death, beginning, proceeding, ending. But in itself, it is the eternal. It is transcendence itself. And if we have found peace and strength and inspiration through Christmas, then we have found that which will enable us to live the truly human life for all our days. So I hope you enjoyed Christmas in that way. Now, living the truly human life means living the religious life. I've said this over and over again, but I'm sure you all appreciate and understand what I'm trying to convey here. And if we experience any of the holy days in the way we have been considering these few minutes, then it spells the renovation of religious living for the whole world, which means the renovation of human living for the whole human race. It will take us out of our subhuman condition. We are on the way to full humanity, evolving towards it. It will take us out of our subhuman condition into the fully human condition. The condition which is characterized above all by the fact that we are capable of holistic consciousness. That is what consciousness is evolving towards through the human kingdom, and only through the human kingdom on this planet. This is the responsibility of each member of the human species, to work with that evolutionary process and bring about that fulfillment, which is not and never can be a personal, separate, individual fulfillment. Of course, there is individual fulfillment experienced in many ways, but actually it is the fulfillment of transcendence itself which finds its fulfillment in terms of humanity, completely through the mortal, finite individual. Now, nothing can be more marvelous than this and working for it. And of course, it implies complete selflessness. Complete selflessness. Because the holistic consciousness has transformed, completely transmuted our separative, isolative, finite consciousness into the all-embracing divine consciousness, the absolute consciousness. Now, I might as well say here, without fear of hell and pain in any shape or form, without that fear, and also completely free of the lure of heaven, all the jolly old religions, I know the religions themselves won't mind it, the men, the people will. All the jolly old religions have promised a permanent continuity in heaven or hell for the goodies or baddies respectively, which is sheer nonsense, utter rubbish. You, the individual here and now, are the totality of the universe embodied in some degree or other, in some form or other. And when this manifestation finishes, then all those energies are once again just the primordial energy in itself. And there's nothing else. Now, if we can really see that, not merely believe it, agree with what I have said, or disagree with what I have said. If one really sees that, then all fear will disappear. And also, the greed for the carrot, namely heaven, that also will disappear. And when that happens, we shall certainly live humanly. We shall live with understanding of a profound nature, so profound that one cannot put it into words, and with a compassion so real, so deep, that all that we know here and now in our limited subhuman state as love will be no more. And we as individuals, because the organism remains the individual separate organism, we as individuals will be able to absorb anything and everything that life and the universe brings to us. And that absorption takes place in him who is, as they say in Sanskrit, kutastha, rock-seated, absolutely stable, invincible, indestructible. You will then really know the meaning of the indestructibility of transcendence. Because transcendence is not like just an atom. We used to believe, with our scientific knowledge, that every chemical atom was indestructible. And in the theologies which were built after about the 5th century BC, plastered the scientific ideas of the indestructibility of God upon their theological systems. They didn't realize that there is continuous change, and that change, which means birth and death, coming into existence, going out of existence, is the way that growth takes place, and the way that fruition of the purpose of the separate existences that have come into being in the separate kingdoms of nature can take place. So, devoid of fear, devoid of the greed for getting something wonderfully pleasant and happy after death in terms of heaven, free of all that, live the good, noble life self-responsibly. Then only can we be truly self-responsible. Now, you know, throughout the world's history, we have seen the emergence of several religions, and all of them, without exception, have claimed, I'm talking the religions of the past, they have claimed that theirs is the one and only way. Now, that is a utterly false statement. It occurs in Hinduism, it occurs in Buddhism, in Zarathustrianism, in Islam, in Christianity. Even the Buddha is said, reputed to have said, whether he actually said it, I wonder. I often wonder, I doubt it. But he is reputed to have said, all systems of religion, all dhammas are void. This is the only one, the one he taught. Now I really can't imagine that he who had realized the transcendent state, a holistic consciousness, could have said such a obviously foolish thing. To me it is obviously foolish. It is said of Jesus, no one comes to the Father except through me. But what he meant by that me is quite another thing. You see? But every religion has suffered from this exclusiveness. And yet, every religion has been united in certain special matters. Particularly the ethics of human living. They have all emphasized the supreme importance of harmlessness, of truthfulness, of wisdom, of purity, of goodness, loving kindness, and also of beauty. Beauty was perhaps most strongly emphasized by Plato when he talked of his great ideas, goodness, truth, and beauty. Those were his three great principles. But beauty is implicit, sometimes explicit, in the religious texts also of the world as such. And we must take great account of that, because we all of us, individual human beings, seek beauty very often without knowing it. The very fact that we seek excellence in this, that, or the other direction, if it is only to be the top pop singer of the world, or to break all the old records of snooker or whatever they may be, and so on. That search after the supreme, you see, they were seeking the supreme, they are seeking the supreme, but they mistake the mortal expression of supremacy for the transcendent expression, the true expression of the supreme. No blame, they don't know any different. That is all. They are victims, if I may use that word, of the natural urges, and our brain contains all those elements which serve as the apparatus for the reptilian, mammalian side of our being, as well as the human and the transcendent side of our being. But the agreement is there with regard to goodness. I have here a letter of July 15th, 1963, written to Sylvia and myself by a doctor, a lady doctor, who was associated with a man, Dr. Williamson by name. These two doctors were responsible for initiating and carrying on what was known as the Peckham Health Center. Now, they had some very original ideas, and their experience proved those ideas definitely. Dr. Williamson was the first to die of the two in the very early 50s, very early 50s. And Dr. Innes Pierce, who was left, wrote this letter to us. And she says that in his last book, Dr. Williamson wrote, "So immortality is within you." That was the final conclusion of that whole book. Immortality is within you. And that heaven is also within you. And that to have it at some future date, you must take it now. Of course, he believed in the idea of rebirth and continuity and so forth, of the separate individual. This is where the whole lot of the teachers have made their mistakes, bar Krishnamurti. This is where he presents something which is utterly new. There is nothing for me, the separate individual, as a separate individual. Insofar as the consciousness of the separate individual comes to its fruition, its culminating point in holistic consciousness, then one is no longer a separate being for whom there is any future. All future absolutely vanishes. And if he doesn't realize holistic consciousness, when he dies completely and utterly. So he wrote, you must take it now through everything you see and touch and do. That sentence to me anticipates something which we have talked of in our meetings during these years, that the senses really are the cords of communion. If we strip ourselves of all selfness, separate selfness, isolative, separative consciousness. He also said, it is not what you do, but how you do it that counts in life. Not what you do, but how you do it. That doesn't mean that if you commit murder, some horrible thing, or do anything horrible in a right how, there is no right how for such things, but if you think you do it in a right how, then it does matter. What you do does matter, absolutely. Now, Dr. Pierce, in his Pierce, quotes something which Dr. Williamson held very strongly. And this quotation is from what was written by a Catholic monk, Fra Giovanni, written in 1514 to his friends. I imagine it may have been written as Easter or Christmas greetings. But this is what the Catholic monk wrote. To his friends, I am your friend, and my love for you goes deep. There is nothing I can give you which you have not got, meaning already got. It lies embodied in you. It only waits awakening. It only waits a bringing out and a recognizing by you. But there is much, very much, that while I cannot give it, you can take. No heaven can come to us unless our hearts find rest in today. Now, this instant. Here you find something said nearly 5 centuries ago, which is really quite remarkable. Our hearts find rest. Remember the words of Jesus, come unto me, all ye that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. With what is mankind heavy, weary, and heavy laden? With all his images, his misconceptions, his beliefs, his fantasies, and with his continuous search for sensational experience. And it causes confusion in the mind, in the deeps of the mind, and throughout the heart. Intellect and emotion, for practically all mankind, even today, intellect and emotion are in turmoil, in constant turmoil. There is no restfulness. There is no serenity. There is no peace in the, as they now say, almost 5,000 millions on the globe. 5,000 million people are in this state. So they are not in a state of rest. He who has released the purpose of his existence, the complete humanity, which is the purpose of our existence on this globe, he who has not released it cannot be restful. And Fra Giovanni says at the end of that paragraph, take heaven. Now when Fra Giovanni uses the words take or grasp, he uses both words, we with our, what we have of our Buddhist ideas and teaching and so forth, would say, no, you can't grasp these things. But I should imagine that Fra Giovanni, considering what he has written, was well aware, although he didn't express it in different words, was well aware that to take heaven or to grasp that which is transcendent means really to aspire towards it and so to live the holy life that it naturally is released out of your own being. Giovanni goes on, no peace lies in the future, which is not hidden in this present little instant. Take peace. Live peacefully. If we are not peaceful in ourselves, all the peace conferences of the world, all the demonstrations and turmoil and furore of mortals who have fixed ideas of what ought to be, you see, are absolutely useless. Because they bring about, with their very intensity and violence, they bring about a reaction which is unpeaceful. The gloom of the world is but a shadow. Interesting. 5 centuries ago, the gloom of the world is a shadow. Behind it, yet within our reach, is joy. There is radiance and glory in the darkness, could we but see. How many people in the world today can see the radiance and glory in the darkness? Take this country alone. We are about 55 million today, aren't we? Are there 55 people who can really see the radiance and the glory in the midst of the darkness? I doubt if there are 55. 1 in a million. Many see, because that is how their psyche functions, they see their own desire and they would like their wish fulfillment, that there will be radiance, there will be glory. But who? Who is the person who defines this radiance and glory? What is it that defines it? The imperfect mind of the subhuman. So that radiance and glory which man struggles for in his subhuman state is not the real radiance and glory of transcendence itself. So Giovanni says, could we but see, and to see we have only to look. I beseech you, look. How many of us can look? Look without upsetting, smudging, destroying that which we are looking at. And how do we upset it? How do we destroy it? By the continuous chatter in the brain in the act of looking. If we can look without agreement, without disagreement, without criticism, without approval, without disapproval, then that looking is so pure that the eyes, which are the instrument for the function of sight, will be a cord of communion. There will be the state of unity, of peace, of transcendent love operating. And if one can ever look that way, one will really experience here now in this mortal body the meaning of love. And once you have experienced that, all the other meanings which we know and which subhuman the subhuman world knows are completely negated. There is not merely acceptance involved in this transcendent loving. There is a being at one with that which you are looking at. Consider the way, for instance, in which people treat their pets. How they smarm over the pet. It's a whole heap of nonsense. Can they let that pet just be itself? See how they try to twist it to their idea of what the pet should be like, and so forth. The ugliness of the fashions which are imposed upon pets, the way they are tailored or sheared or anything but what the good God made them. What is that due to? The imposition of the power lust of the owner of that pet. It must be like this, that and the other, and no other way. Parents do that with their children. That's one of the wonderful things I learned from my own father. He let me be. He loved me. Giovanni goes on, life is so generous a giver, but we, judging its gift by their covering, cast them away as ugly, heavy or hard. We collect the brown paper and string and neglect the goods which are covered by that brown paper and string. Remove the covering and you will find beneath it a living splendor woven of love by wisdom with power. That's really a gem of a sentence. Look at its implications, its tremendous significance. Remove the covering and you will find beneath it a living splendor woven of love by wisdom with power. I must have said it 1,000 times at least during these years here, that we are transcendence embodied. But the embodiment, that which embodies, is like a suit, clothes which we wear. The clothes get outworn. We value the clothes and forget the living being which those clothes cover. Similarly, in our life as individuals, transcendence, which is right here, is covered over by our mistaking the suit which transcendence wears, as you or me or anybody in the world mistake that suit for the reality. We pamper it, we doll it up. Welcome it, this living splendor. Grasp it. Everything that we call a trial, a sorrow, or a duty, believe me, the gift is there. In the trial, the sorrow, the duty. The gift is there, and the wonder of an overshadowing presence. You see how throughout the world's history there has been a person here, a person there, who has touched transcendence. Of course, I would use slightly different words. That presence does not merely overshadow. It is actually concretized in us. That's how matter comes into being. Transcendence, which is the nondescript, the absolutely spiritual, so utterly different from all that we know in our life in this world, in this material world, constricts itself stage by stage, until at last it produces solid matter. It imprisons itself. And then there starts the process of the disimprisoning that hidden splendor, unconstricting itself through our living the pure life. Our joys too, be not content with them as joys. They too conceal diviner gifts. Life is so full of meaning and purpose, so full of beauty. Beneath its covering, you will find earth only cloaks heaven. What a beautiful way of putting it. Earth only cloaks heaven. Heaven has become earth. God has become man. You know how Eckhart said, man verily is God, God verily is man. It's astonishing that the Catholic Church didn't knock him off. How a man, a Catholic could have, he was a devout Catholic, how a Catholic mystic could have written just that sort of thing. And consider what Ruysbroeck wrote. He was Flemish, I think. Yes, that's right, he was Flemish. He talked of the realization of him who lives the truly Christian life of God without intermediary. And the church would never have that. It declared everyone must have an intermediary. Not merely Jesus Christ, but the church. The commissioner standing at the gate of the temple of God. The church. And you had to give unto the church what the church wanted. Not only needed, not merely needed, what the church needed was poverty, chastity, obedience. But it needed material power, wealth, and so on. Courage then to claim it, that is all. But courage you have, and the knowledge that we are pilgrims together, wending through unknown country homewards. We have that knowledge inside us, but it's quite hidden in the 5,000 millions. And so at this time I greet you, not quite as the world sends greetings, but with profound esteem, valuation. Valuation of what? Of the transcendent, which is eternal life, as it is put in the Chandogya Upanishad, for instance. Brahman, the transcendent, is prana, life. Not merely biological life, but life in its totality. It is this life which is sacred, which is realized only in so far as the psyche is utterly emptied of all that clutters it and obstructs the light of transcendence shining freely through us.